Well, thanks, everybody. Dave Laux didn't really go into a lot of detail, but I started with Westinghouse. My undergrad and master's degree here in electrical engineering, and started work for Westinghouse. Well, Westinghouse was acquired by Eaton in 1994. So I'm thinking April, it was 38 years with the company, which is pretty extraordinary when I think about it. But there's so much to know. As you guys know, in electrical engineering, my sister's a lawyer, and I always joke with her because I'll ask her a question about intellectual property law or immigration law or something. She goes, "I don't know that." And I go, "What do you know?" Well, we all specialize, and electrical engineering is so broad, I can only imagine the challenges. So what we're going to try to do is give you a couple of those rules of thumbs that you just have in your hip pocket so that when somebody throws something at you, you can kind of put on the, you know, the BS filter. Does that sound right or does that not sound right? There's a ton of stuff we could cover. We're going to try to do the Pareto chart. We're going to do what we think is most important. So we're going to cover, well, we're going to talk about short circuit studies, which is what you've just been doing. A close corollary to that, of course, is arc flash studies. Protective device coordination, key. Selector coordination is now mandated in the code, as you know. Load flow. Load flow is when we start a motor, we close a, remember Dan started that big motor and the voltage dip? We're going to talk about that, which, of course, then is motor starting. Power factor and harmonics, which are closely related. No longer can we just throw a capacitor on the line because harmonics are, well, just about everything we put into a building now is nonlinear, so that's a problem we're going to talk about. Transient stability and insulation, we're not going to talk so much about that. More and grounding studies, super important, but we don't have time. And then switching transient study, not really any time. What I'm going to do right now is I'm going to talk about short circuit studies. And you all should have my notes, so you can, you know, just scribble on there. Tomorrow, we're going to cover the motor starting and power factor and harmonic analysis. Most of what you're going to do here is going to be hands-on, very little classroom, but just to kind of level set everybody so that we all have the same equations and we sort of know, you know, where.
Hey, you got a mic on. Is it working?
It's just recording. I'm not doing a, we decided not to. Can you guys hear me back there okay? Okay. Yeah, I know. There's the whatever he's doing out there. If you'll open up your CAGs and you go to page 1.3-13, you're going to see all these equations that I'm going to cover. But Dan ran through them. Single phase transformer, VA is V times A, volts times amps. The trick is that we typically in power systems world typically deal with higher voltages and higher powers, so we don't really deal with VA, we deal more with KVA or even MVA. So the rule of thumb there is KV. So if I had a 480 volt system, what would I plug in there for the KV in that second equation?
0.48.
Yeah, 0.48. So 0.48, 208 system, 0.208. That's what we're mostly going to be dealing with. And of course, this is when you get into bigger systems, medium megavolts times amps is MVA. We don't typically deal with megavolts in our world, even on transmission lines. But what you'll typically see is kilovolts times kiloamperes gives you 1,000 times 1,000 is 1,000,000. So that's what you'll see in those big, big power systems. And then, you know, of course, there's your transformer. And those equations work whether you're talking about the primary side or the secondary side. You notice I didn't have any subscript on either of those equations. Didn't matter whether it's primary voltage, secondary voltage. They just have to be the same. So if you've got primary current, you've got primary voltage, secondary current, secondary voltage. What you'll see is in fact, that's one of the ways you calculate the equations. Power is not conserved in a transformer, but VA is. So volts times amps in and volts times amps out are, for an ideal transformer, the same. Three phase, we already talked about that. They're not the same. The problem is that you have each circuit has multiple windings connected to it, so there's a little bit of assistance from its neighbor. So with a single phase transformer, I've got one winding. I just connect a load to one winding. But in a three phase, each load is connected to multiple windings. So you have to put it in that fudge factor, and the fudge factor turns out to be the square root of 3. So really, as Dan went through, don't need to repeat it. The key thing is, when you're talking about three-phase systems, especially if you have a Y system, you have the neutral, and it's always confusing when someone says voltage, is that line to neutral or is that line to line? all these calculations are going to be line to line. So when we're going to talk about per unit equations here in a second, everything is going to be done line to line. KVA is the same, and of course MVA is the same there too. VA is conserved. I mentioned that earlier. So if someone gives you the primary current and primary voltage, but you have the secondary voltage, you know, it's pretty easy to figure out what the current is, even if they don't give you the KVA. So straightforward there. And we did an example out there, just to recap. This one's going to be a 5% impedance transformer. So could you, without looking at your notes, because they're in your notes, could you just quick calculate what the primary and secondary current of that transformer are going to be? And you can check your notes to see if it's the first slide of the second page. But basically, you know the equations. It's KVA equals volts times amps times the square root of 3. What's the primary volts? 0.48. We don't know what the primary current is, but we know what the KVA is, so we rearrange a little algebraic equation, and we solve, and we get, on the primary side, 90.2 amps. Well, now we have the equation, so we just simply change primary current to secondary current, primary voltage to secondary voltage, plug and chug, and we get 208, and there's our famous 208 volts, 208 amps on a 75 kVA. But you notice I put in that little tidbit in there about the Z equals 5%, and you know Dan went through how we do this. The really easy rule of thumb when you have an infinite source, which is a pretty good, you know, if you don't have any other knowledge about what your utility capacity is, or you don't know necessarily a lot about the system, it's a good rule of thumb, and it's a pretty straightforward. A lot of people don't know where this per unit term comes from. You know, you see it stamped on the side of transformers. Sometimes you'll see it stamped on the side of generators. They don't call it per unit. You'll see an X and a D and a double prime, X double prime D, or you'll hear subtransient reactance. But it's the impedance. But it's per unit, so it's not in ohms, it's in percent. Well, percent of what? So the way I like to think of it, I mean, I can go through the technical term, but the way I like to think of it is, when I say 5% impedance, what that means is if I were to short circuit the secondary of that transformer, and I were to put 5% nominal voltage on the primary, so it's a, let's say it's a 1,000 volt transformer, so I put what? 50 volts on the primary, I will get full load current on the secondary of that transformer with only 5%. But that works to our, so think about this. If I put 5% voltage and I get 100% current at the secondary, what happens if I put 10% voltage on the primary? What if I double the primary voltage, what's going to happen to the secondary current? Well, you already know that. It's going to double. Well, what happens if I bump it up to, what is my next one, 5 times? Yeah, what happens if I take that and multiply it times 5? What's going to happen to my secondary current? So now I've got 10 times nominal current. What if I put 100% full load current, so or full load voltage, full voltage on the primary, which is my nominal voltage? How much current am I going to see on the secondary? It's shorted. It's voltage fault. What am I going to see? Well, I double that again. Well, do you notice something interesting about that ratio there? So you put 100% in, and I'm getting 20 times current out. What's the relationship between 20 and 5%?
Negative.
They're reciprocals of each other. So that's the trick that Dan was showing you over there, is if you take the percent impedance of that transformer and divide it into the full load current, which is the same thing as multiplying by the reciprocal, I get the short circuit current with an infinite source connection on the primary side. So it's great. This is a little thing you put in your back pocket when you're out there just doing a quick calculation. Someone says, hey, I got 22,000 amp breakers in this panel. Is this good enough? You go, show me the transformer. And then you walk over to it. It's a 75 kVA transformer, 208. You go, 208. Oh, it's 208 amps. What's the impedance? It's 5% impedance. You multiply by 20. You get round number 4,000 amps, and you got no problem. So that's the trick. There's the more formal equation. The more formal equation says that the short circuit current is equal to the full load current times this ratio, which you can either do it 1/1. So when you see the number, when it says 5%, what is that really? That's 0.05. So you can either do 100 divided by the percentage, or you can do 1/0.05. It's the same thing. So I mentioned earlier, with our little transformer, if I drop that impedance to 5.75%, is my short circuit current going to go up, or is my short circuit current going to go down relative to the 5% impedance transformer? It's going to go down, because if I put a bigger number in the denominator gets bigger, the ratio gets smaller, and that's my multiplier factor. So that's exactly right. So if I took the full load current, and I said I had a system that I had infinite source on the primary, and I said, what's my secondary current? In this case, it's only 3,600 amps. Because we used to have a 5% impedance, but now it's dropped down to 5.75%. But that's a good rule of thumb, but we unfortunately live in the real world. So I'm going to give you some more rules of thumb. Sometimes what'll happen is almost all the time you'll have motor connected to your system. Think of a building. If the motor is downstream from a drive, you can ignore the fault contribution from the motor because the drive will block it. But if it's across the line, if it's just a contactor, a combination starter, the motor will actually turn into a generator. And so now, how much do you contribute back into the system? How do you compensate for that? So that tends to make your fault current goes up, but then in the real world, you don't have infinite availability. I mean, Dan was over here showing you that circuit had, on a 13.8 system, well, he didn't calculate that was on a 120 volt, but it's not, I mean, on a medium voltage system, 10,000 amps, 12,000 amps is kind of what you expect on medium voltage, and then there's a step-down transformer if you're buying a 480, and it's going to have some impedance to it. So the question is, how do you use that? Well, I'm going to call it the shortcut Z. So if you go to in your consulting application guide 1.3-14, this is where we're going to cover this technique. It looks a little daunting, so we're just going to. Yeah. Bottom right corner of the page, you'll see everything I'm talking about here is in that book. We obviously are not going to cover everything in this book today. Well, I when are you guys leaving? This is probably a more typical system that you would run into. So you've got a utility. The utilities come to you and they said, you've asked them. They've either given it to you. They'll give you the short circuit in one of three ways. They'll give it to you as an MVA rating. They'll give it to you as an R plus JX rating, an impedance rating, or they'll give it to you in short circuit amps. And then, of course, you'll need to know what the voltage is, too. If they give it to you in MVA, you don't really care what the voltage is. That's kind of the beauty of the per unit calculation. You ignore voltages. It's off the table. You do everything in per unit, and it'll give you amps regardless of voltages, so that's nice. But in this situation, we've got a one MVA transformer. We've got three circuits, each with 100 feet of one per phase, 350 MCM, in steel conduit, magnetic conduit, and it's a typical building. It's got motors, it's got lights, it's got computers. And what we're going to say is there's 250 kVA of motors on each of these circuits. So you've got 100 feet of cable. At the end of that circuit, you've got 250 kVA of motors, and then the balance is lighting. But you don't really care about the lighting. What we want to know is the motors, because those are little generators. And what we want to do is we want to calculate two faults. We want to calculate a fault inside the switchboard. You know, somebody dropped a crescent wrench in there. And then the other one is 100 feet away down another one per phase, 350 KC mil. I said MCM, I'm old, but same thing. So how do we do it? This is a lot more complicated than just taking the KVA and dividing into the impedance. So this is the beauty of where this per unit comes into, because what we're going to do is we're going to convert each one of those things into per unit impedances. So if we redraw this equation, we can draw it like this. The utility has some impedance. The transformer has some impedance. And then we've got those three circuits, and at the three circuits have cable, and then they also have this generator load. And this generator load has impedance to it. I mean, typically what we should do is we should draw little circles up here to represent generators, but just consider the top of every one of those four lines as a generator feeding current into the bus. And we got to figure out how much current's going to flow into this fault and how much current's going to flow into that fault. So what are we going to do? Well, we need some data. Well, first off, it's pretty straightforward. No magic here. You know, we're going to add impedances together, and then we're going to bring the parallel impedances together. So that's the trick. You know, the trick is to assign a value for each one of those resistances, and then simplify the equations down, and we're going to be good. So, one other thing. This is real important. Sometimes, especially when you're working with an oil field transformer, it will have multiple KVA ratings on it. It will say 1,000 KVA, and there'll be a slash, and it'll say 1,333 KVA. Well, which number do I use? I'm trying to figure out the fault current. We know how to do KVA equals volts times amps times square root of 3. Well, what's my amps? Well, the amps is, whatever KVA it is. And that's why you put fans on transformers. You can get short time boosting the power. Does that affect the short circuit current too? The answer is no. When you overduty a transformer, you will get more current out of there, but the inherent impedance of the transformer, the underlying resistance of the wires, doesn't change. So the rating that we're always going to use when we do our per unit calculation is always the OA, which, again, I'm old. I don't remember. There's a new term for it. It's not called OA anymore, but it's the base rating of the transformer, the far left on the slashes. So that's a trick thing. The other tricky thing is, and we've already said this, always use the line-to-line voltages on the transformer. Don't ever use line-to-neutral, because all these per unit calculations only work with the line-to-line. And then the other thing is, you should know that these calculations really refer, as we know, impedance is equal to a real component plus an imaginary component. Well, it will turn out that these calculations that we do, the shortcut method uses just Z, just impedance. That is a shortcut. It is not a precise answer. I'll show you the precise answer here later. It's good enough for what we're talking about, but in fact, I think there's a footnote in here. If any of you guys, IEEE standard 141 gives you the exact equations. It used to be called the Red Book. It might still be called the Red Book, but again, I'm old. I don't know what I think they've gotten away from the color books. I think they're sort of going into individual standards, but IEEE 141 has the exact calculations here. So what I want to do is draw your attention to that same 1.3-13. There are a whole bunch of equations that are too small to see on this page here, but that is a really nice little handy cheat sheet, because what we're going to have to do is we're going to need to change, we're going to have to get in and out of this per unit system. We're given per unit numbers, and we have to know how to move in and out of per unit based on what the voltage of the system is, how big the transformer is, what the resistance of the wire is, because we're going to be given data from, as we'll see in the chart, in absolute ohms. Well, I got to convert that to per unit, because if I'm going to do everything in per unit, I got to convert ohms. So these are important equations. You'll also, remember I told you that the utility will give you data on short circuit, and they might give it to you in MVA, they might give it to you in Z, and they might give it to you in amps. You got to be able to move between each of those calculations. So these equations are going to become useful. They're very useful. The concept of base in the per unit, it's like when I say percent of what? Well, it's percent of a base value. What is a base value? Well, for those of you who had power system analysis class, in terms of the KVA base, you pick it. You just pick it. You know, pick a number. In terms of the others, you'll do the calculations, and we'll show that. And then more equations. Lots of great equations. Motor contributions. This fine print. This is the gotcha right down here. You can't read this, but it says induction motor. If you go to a generator, if you go to a Caterpillar genset and you walk up to the nameplate, it's a synchronous generator. Synchronous machines always publish impedance on them. If you go to a motor that's up in an air handling unit, they never publish impedance on them. So I need the impedance. So what's the value? Well, what IEEE 141 says to do is, if you don't know, it's basically 25% impedance. So Z is equal to 25%. So now we've got some data. Now we want to plug it into our little magic cheat sheet here. And so there's our utility. Well, it was a 500 MVA utility. How many ohms is that in per unit? Well, one of our cheat sheet equations said per unit impedance is equal to the KVA base divided by the utility fault KVA. Well, what was the utility fault KVA? It's 500 MVA. So that's 500,000 KVA. Well, what's our base? What's our KVA base? It's whatever we want it to be. Now, there happened to be only one transformer on that drawing, and it happened to be a 1,000 KVA transformer. So let's use 1,000 KVA as our base. It doesn't matter, but you just have to pick it. So if we chose 1,000 KVA, in this case, the per unit impedance of the utility is 0.002. So now I can plug in a resistor. Well, what's the per unit impedance of my transformer? Well, they gave us that. That was stamped right on the nameplate of the transformer. It was 5.75%. So now I know, so what's the total path impedance of my utility transformer and my utility? Well, it's 0.002 plus 0.0575. The motors, A, B, and C up there, another one of the equations that was in there, said that the motor contribution per unit impedance, KVA base divided by 4. 4, again, was because it's induction. It would be 5 if those happened to be synchronous machines. But so if you had generators on the system, if someone said to you, hey, you're designing a data center tomorrow, and you need to calculate the interrupting rating of a tiebreaker on this main-tie-main board, because theoretically, when I do the closed transition switchover, I'll have both the utility and the generators connected to the same thing. Well, then you've got to maybe you put in the spec, but somebody's got to calculate what is the fault current that thing could actually see. Well, if it doesn't have the data on the generator, you would plug in 5 in this equation for a synchronous machine. But for the motors that you hear in this building, it's going to be 4. When we do that, it's 1,000 KVA, which again is just our chosen base. But whatever you choose, make sure you stay the same through all your calculations. 4 times 250, remember it was 250 kVA is what we said was the motor connected load. So it's 1 per unit. And then the impedance of the cables, well, if you go to, you can just put your finger in the current page and go to page 1.5-14. I always have trouble finding this information in the code book. it's really handy right here for me. But this is where you find the actual R and X and Z values for different size cables in metallic or non-metallic conduit. So when you go to the cheat sheet, you slide down that, it's table 1.5-16, it's over there on the left-hand side, and you'll see 350 KC mils. And you slide all the way down there, and it's single conductor, but you'll notice that those numbers are in 1,000 feet. We want 100 feet. So you basically take whatever you see in there and divide it by 10. And you take that number, and you come up with ohms per 100 feet. Well, we did this one with an earlier version. I guess they revised it. I think it's 0.0617 in the book. We say zero, well, because I'm divided by 10, so we say 619, but okay, so it's close enough. But so now I have that data, so I know what the Z is. So that's my cable up there, so I can plug that in. But I got to convert it to per unit. Remember, we're doing the calculations. The table's giving you the data in absolute ohms, but I've got to do the numbers. I've got to normalize it to the base, because again, that's what my percentage is. It's a percentage of the base. So my base is 1,000 kVA, and then I plug in one of my other equations here, cable impedance per unit, and I get 0.027 per unit ohms. So now I got a 1 per unit generator, which is my motor, in series with a 0.027 per unit cable, and I've got all my data. So I plug it in. There's my utility. My 1 MVA transformer, my motors, and then my 100-foot cables. So now it's just a matter of, you know, doing the simplification. So 1/1/1 rule turns these all into 0.342 ohms. So if we go to the next page, you get this, which is the sum of the utility and the transformer, and there's that one. So now I parallel those two together, and now I've got my per unit impedance. So if I want to calculate the actual fault current, I plug it into this equation, which is on that 1.3-13 page, and it comes out to be 23,720 amperes. I want to ask you a question, though. Can anybody just fire up their calculators real quick and tell me what the fault current is for, remember, it's a 5.75 1 MVA transformer with a 480-volt secondary. Tell me what the fault current of that transformer would be without doing all this other stuff. 1 MVA, 480 volts, 5.75% impedance. What's the fault, the secondary short circuit current of that transformer? Yep, 20,900. Wait a minute. This has got all kinds of impedance in the circuit, and it's higher fault current. Why is that? That's exactly right. That's the danger of just doing, we said that that calculation through the transformer is sort of conservative in that we assume infinite bus. Here we're not even assuming infinite bus. But in the real world system, we have more fault current than that rule of thumb because we've got motors. So be very careful. Typically, what IEEE 141 will recommend and what we publish in this book is that on 208-volt systems, we always assume that out of that 1,000 kVA, we assume that fully half of that is motor load. So 500 kVA would be motor load. If you're doing industrial systems, we assume 100% of the connected load is motors. Now that usually is ridiculous because most of the time you're using drives, and as I said earlier, you can't backfeed fault current through a drive. But when you're working on 480-volt systems, that's why your fault currents can be higher than what you would even calculate what the transformer would produce because of that motor contribution. Now the question is, what's the fault current downstream of the cable? Remember we had a fault up on the switchboard bus. This is right on the bus, but now we got 100 feet of 350 going down to another location. What's the fault current there? Well, it's, you basically just say, you know, the impedance has jumped up by 0.027, so the total impedance is 0.0777. You plug it back into the equation, and you get down to 15,000 amps. So notice how much that drops off. That's one of those interesting things when you're doing the, especially when you're doing selective coordination calculations. The trick with selective coordination is that if the two instantaneous curves of the two breakers overlap, it's a foot race. You know, who's going to trip first? And then you aren't selectively coordinated, and then you don't meet, you know, if you're building an emergency circuit in a hospital or something like that, design's no good. But what you see here is, you know, currents obviously drop off dramatically the further you get out there. Let's see, what else is in here in the fine print? Oh, well, here's why you don't do it the ohm way. I had a, maybe I shouldn't disparage this method, but you might say this per unit thing is kind of weird. Why don't you just use ohms? You know, calculate, it's 480 volts, it's X number of, I mean, what is ohms? E equals IR or E equals IZ. So I know my volts, I know my current, I can calculate what the Z is. I mean, I can do that. Well, I'll show you why you don't want to do that. So let's say that we had a simple situation. That Z could be a transformer, it could be cables, I don't know, who cares. But I can calculate how much current, if I know what the voltage is, and I know what the current is, I can calculate what that Z is. You know, just use Ohm's law. So, or if I don't know what the current is, but I know what the Z is, I could calculate the current that way. This might look kind of confusing. I mean, it's real simple. The current that flows through this resistor is equal to basically what's the voltage across that resistor divided by its resistance. Well, what's the voltage across that resistance? Well, it's this voltage minus this voltage. So this voltage minus this voltage. Well, of course, we don't have much of a voltage on that side, so it simplifies, and that's normally what you're left with. Well, that's pretty straightforward, you say, Dave. Why wouldn't I just use this calculation? You know, why wouldn't you just stamp the ohms on the side of the transformer, and then I could just plug it in? And I mean, you've given me this and this. I could calculate this. Why don't you just do it? Do it that way. Well, and of course we don't. I mean, the transformer. Here's one. This one only has 1.84% impedance. So this might be one of those transformers you see up on the telephone pole. Well, this is in absolute ohms. So I got to do some work to get that data switched over. Well, it's pretty straightforward, I guess. I mean, we know from the cheat sheet table that we can convert per unit to actual if we just have the line-to-line voltage divided by this base. Well, what's our line-to-line voltage? Well, it's whatever that voltage is, and we can say it's 120. And the base is whatever we pick. Well, what is the base? Well, the per unit, we get 1.84, the line-to-line voltage and the KVA base come off the nameplate. Again, they don't have to be this, but here's the thing you got to be careful of. This percent is on that base. If you choose to change the base for your calculations, it's perfectly okay to do that. Remember I told you you can choose whatever you want. Well, this impedance has to change. And so what you'll see in 1.3-13 is the equations to change a per unit value from one base to another base. It's pretty straightforward. It's just multiplying by the ratio of the bases, but you got to do that. And why would you might have to do that? Seldom do you have all the same size transformers in your system. You're going to pick one as your base, which means all the other ones will not have the stamp per unit impedance on the transformer will be for that KVA, but you've chosen a different KVA base for the system, so you're going to have to change every one of those impedances using those rules to change it to this new base. So you're saying, I still don't see that this is easier than ohms. Well, you sort of have to hang with me here, and I'll show you. But anyway, when you plug and chug and you figure it out, it turns out that the actual impedance of that transformer is, 10 milliohms. So the effective impedance of that transformer is 10 milliohms. So we should stamp on that transformer 10 milliohms. We could have saved all this time and trouble by stamping it on there. Well, let's think about that for a second. So, in fact, I think I've got a calculation in here. If I were to put 10 milliohms, 120 volts, I would expect 11,000 amps of current. And that's good. That's exactly what I would expect. But that's on the secondary. So think about this. If I have 11,000 amps flowing in the secondary, do I have 11,000 amps flowing in the primary? No. The current that's flowing in the primary is related to the ratio, the turns ratio of the transformer. So let's say it's a, make it real simple. It's a 4-to-1 transformer. It's 480 volt primary, 120 volt secondary. So I would expect to have 1/4 the current. Well, think about my equation then. Do I put 480 volts divided by 0.016? Would I expect to get a number that's what? 3,000 amps? Because that's how much current's going to flow in the primary. Well, no, the math doesn't work. 120 volts divided by 10 milliohms is equal to 11,000. We know that the primary of that transformer is not going to be 11,000 amps. It's going to be 1/4 that value. So let's round this up to 12,000 amps. 1/4 of 12,000 amps is 3,000 amps. So that's how much current's going to flow in the primary. So I ask you, if I put 3,000 amps here, and I put 480 volts here, and I leave this as this, does that equality work? So type in your calculator. Type 480 divided by 0.0106 and tell me if you get 3,000. Well, it doesn't work. So what's my impedance in my transformer? It depends on whether you're looking at it from the primary or the secondary. The effective impedance of that transformer is, in fact, 10 milliohms when I'm looking at the secondary. So when I'm trying to figure out how big a breaker I connect to the secondary, that's the right answer. But if I'm trying to figure out how much fault current's flowing in the primary, that's not the right answer. I'd have to have two values. But wait, does my transformer have taps? Does the tap change the voltage? Does it therefore change the effective impedance? I would have to have a different impedance for every single tap, both on primary and secondary. So now I'm trying to do the calculations of how much current is going to flow to the secondary of that transformer with, well, pick one. But guess what? Most of our transformers are fed from other transformers, which have taps, which are fed from that. This thing starts to turn into this hydra with all these different like tentacles going every which way. Which values do I use? That is why power systems engineers don't use absolute impedance. This per unit thing sounds complicated, but it's very liberating. I only have one value. I don't care whether it's on primary or secondary. I can tell you what the fault current is. So you got to go through a little more rigmarole. You got to do this, you know, rub your head and pat your tummy to kind of switch these numbers around. But you don't have to worry about, is it on the +3 tap centering or is it, no. So don't use that. The reason I bring this, and I think you guys already know this, but, and it didn't come out of Philadelphia, but there have been consultants who have wanted transformers with nameplates that are in absolute ohms. And we said, are you sure? And, well, that's what we need. And I say, well, you know, that's the situation. This is a single-phase transformer. You don't well, you do work with single-phase, but you work with a lot with three-phase also. Here's the shortcut. We went through all that stuff to do the ohms. Remember our equation before? If we know what the full load current is, divide it by the percent Z, and there's our fault current, and hey they come out to be the same answer. That's a good thing. But does it come out the same answer when I do a three-phase circuit? Because a three-phase circuit is a little more complicated, right? So I have the same 10 milliohm impedance in there. We'll assume that this is a infinite source, a perfect source, zero impedance. What kind of current am I going to get? Well, this is each one of these is still 25 kVA. So 25 kVA, 0.01, calculate what the fault current is. So I have my full load current, divided by percent Z, same equation. We know from the equations that Dan was using over there, my KVA, 25 KVA divided by square root 3 volt line to line, I'm only getting 3.8 kiloamps. Well, wait a minute. I got on a single phase system, I got a 11,000 amps. I get less fault current on a three phase system? That doesn't make any sense. What am I doing wrong here? It's in my notes, but. If each one of these windings is 25 kVA, what's the actual stamp nameplate kVA rating? 75. Then the answer comes out right. I mean, really, a three-phase transformer is just three single-phase transformers. We get all kind of wrapped around the axle with the square root of three, but if you do the math, the kVA is three times the kVA of each individual one. The reason for the square root of three is this crazy business about whether Y connected or delta connected, and you know, current share on the delta and voltages share on the Y, and you know, that's the complicating factor. But the math all works. But again, this is in CAG 1.3-8. I wrote it in even smaller print to make it even more difficult to read. But all this stuff is in there. Basically, that whole chapter is a discussion on power systems analysis. We have kind of taken that as really a tutorial. You know, you've learned a lot of this stuff in school, but you're sort of like, was it volt line to line or line to neutral? So we've kind of published it all in there. And I think you guys are also aware that we have a lot of this stuff online, and you can get CEUs for it too. So for those of you who are trying to get your, I'm assuming most everybody's an FE, or what I used to be called EITs, but you need to get, you know, in addition to you need to have your experience, you also have to have, you know, some CEU credits. So you can study this and also get your credits for it. Just to kind of simplify, this is not in there. Maybe we'll put this in the next rev, but another rule of thumb that you can just sort of keep in your back pocket. As you know, as you increase the KVA, fault current goes up. As you decrease the impedance, fault current goes up. So as I increase both, fault current really goes up, sort of an exponential kind of a thing. But if you just want some rules of thumb, like somebody, you've already know, you know, the rule of thumb is the, you know, the 1.2 times the KVA rating that gives you your 480 volt amps. But somebody might throw a 3% impedance at you, or they might throw a 6% impedance at you, and it's like, okay, let's see, 1/5 is 20 times, 1/6 is So anyway, what I did was I mathematically plotted. This is KVA on the x-axis, and this is amps on the y-axis, and then these lines are the different impedances, and this is what you'll see in at 100 KVA on a 208 system, you get whatever that number of amps is. It's somewhere between 1,000 and 10,000. That's not what's important. What's important is this little curve over here, because what I did here is I changed the rules or changed the scales a little bit. So here, remember, we've had KVA on the x-axis and amps on the y-axis. Here I've got percent impedance and then this multiplier. Well, what is this multiplier? Well, this multiplier is a factor that you would use called a short circuit factor that you multiply times your KVA, and it will tell you, I'll show you how this thing works. So let's say I had a 5% transformer. Well, what that says here is this short circuit factor is 55.5. So if I had a 1,000 kVA transformer, I just take that multiplier and multiply it times 1,000. So how many amps of short circuit would I expect on a 5% transformer, 1 MVA, 55,500 amps. So this isn't in the book, but it's kind of a handy-dandy little cheat sheet. I did it also for the 480 volt bus, and you kind of already know some of these numbers just off the top of your head, but 5% right here, 24 times. So if I had a 1,000 kVA transformer? Remember the 1.2 rule? How many amps of secondary current would I see on a 1,000 kVA 480 volt transformer? 1,200 amps. 1,200 times 24 is my short circuit current. So it's just sort of a, I don't know. I've never seen, I think I invented this. I've never seen this anywhere, but it's not published. So you heard it here first. But this is just a little, so you kind of, if you just memorize a couple of these numbers in the back of your pocket, this is your 480 volt system and this is your 208 system. Those are your multipliers times the KVA, that's your short circuit current. You don't have to go through the figuring out all the amps and things like that. Checking my time. You'll also see if you go to 1.3-16 all the way to 1.3-18, there's another shortcut method. It's a table method. So what you'll have here is your distance from the transformer. Because you have the cheat sheet, you now know how many amps the thing produces at the secondary of the transformer. But you're not bolting your loads directly to the secondary of the transformer. It's connected downstream. So what we've got here is the cheat sheets give you cable size and nicely including multiple per phase. And then these right here are going to be what your utility available fault currents are from infinity down to 50 MVA. That says utility KV, it's KVA. Ooh, typo. But then you just slide across here and then you figure out how much fault current you have. So here's that thing I told you. IEEE 141 assumes that you have 50% connected motor load on a 208 system. And on 240 volt delta and 480 volt systems, whether it's Y or delta, always assume it's 100%. That's your worst case calculation. Now, one thing that you notice is if you look at these currents right here, this is like between, I don't know, so that's 15, 16, 17, 18 to 20,000 amps. So this is a 300 kVA transformer, 4.5% impedance, 208 volts. Well, you also see different tables in there that I can do 480 volts. So if you looked at the 480 volt one, would the fault current be higher or lower for the same size transformer? Lower. In fact, how much lower? Well, it's just the ratio of the two voltages, right? Except the math doesn't work. We're only getting like 9,000 amps or less, 9,000 amps. The reason that the ratio on these tables doesn't work is because, remember I told you, when you're on the 208 volt table, it's assuming that 50% of your connected load are motors. When you move to the 480 volt table, it assumes that 100% of the connected load. So the fault currents are going to be higher than just simply the ratio between the voltages. This one's been bumped, so 9.6 kiloamps was bumped because the calculation was based on the higher percentage of motor loads. If that's not enough, there is another thing that you need to worry about, and that's this so-called asymmetry factor. This is a groan from the back row. Well, here's the deal. We don't switch resistive loads by and large. We switch loads that have energy storage. It's magnetic energy, it's capacitive energy, there's energy in there. And that energy has to do something. And especially with magnetic circuits, we all have the famous equation that says, I can't switch current through an inductor instantaneously because bad things happen. So here's the bad thing that happens, one of the bad things that happens. Is when I try to, in this case, I'm closing in on an inductive load or opening an inductive load. This magnetic field that Dan was talking about, this inductive or reactive current, the imaginary current, it's flowing. It may be imaginary, and the only reason they call it imaginary is because mathematicians called it imaginary, but it's not imaginary. It's really there. It's got to go somewhere, and that somewhere ends up causing our current to be offset. So those calculations we've done up to this point were all RMS calculations. I told you how much current's going to flow. I know what my impedance is. Everything's good. The problem is that for the first half cycle or so, maybe even a couple cycles, have you ever tied a rope to the end of something and you've done one of these things and the wave kind of goes down there? Well, we're snapping we're causing that transient on the system, and it's bumping that curve off of zero axis. Well, that peak value, the forces inside circuit breakers are proportional to the square of the current. So if you say, oh, Dave, it's only bumping up 50%, who cares? Well, what if I got a 22,000 amp breaker and I've done my math and I got 18,000 amps and I'm good as gold, no problem. But you ignore the asymmetry factor. What if that thing pushed it up over 24,000 amps? It only takes a half a cycle for that thing to blow up. So we got to deal with this. And that's there's another cheat sheet in there. If you look at 1.3-2, 1.3-3, there's this little table down here. And it says circuit X over R ratio and peak multiplication factor. Well, what's this all about? Well, it turns out that the magnitude of this offset, it's not just the how much inductance is in the system, because then you would expect the bigger the transformer, the bigger the offset. So if I had a little itty bitty 75 kVA transformer, I'd have this much offset, and if I had a MVA or a 10 MVA, I'd have this much offset. No. The little guy can have more offset than the big guy. That's why I talked about those load center breakers can blown up. It's the ratio of the X, which is my inductance, to the resistance. So that's the X over R. Well, where am I going to find that data? I didn't ask you to look for it, but I'll just tell you right now, it's not stamped on your transformers. Where are you going to get this? Never fear, I'll show you. Not that you were fearing, but anyway. By the way, the asymmetry factor is just a corollary that, oh, by the way, the other issue is all those calculations we just did were all in RMS. Well, what is RMS? Well, it depends. If it's a perfect sinusoid, the peak value is equal to the RMS value times 1 over the square root of 2. So 1.414 times that RMS value will be my peak. If I've got a perfect sinusoid, which in the days of nonlinear loads is not necessarily the case, but that's the normal peak that you would normally expect. When we have this asymmetric peak, if you will, so here, if I have an arbitrary value of peaks at 1, negative peak, minus 1, the RMS value is going to be equal to, well, if the peak value is equal to the RMS value times 1 over the square root of 2, I can move my math around and I can say the RMS value is equal to the peak value times, 0.707, 1 over square root of 2. So whichever one I have. So on your 120-volt circuit on your wall outlet, you've really got 169 volts or, round numbers. So, that's the actual peak. We're more caring about current at this point. I'm also ignoring harmonics, which is, I think tomorrow we're going to not ignore harmonics. We're going to talk about that. And that, of course, assumes there's no energy storage. So I'm switching it resistive load. But here's the equation to calculate that table that was on 1.3-2, 1.3-3. The equation there is square root of 2 times the 1 plus e raised to the minus pi over x over r. I'm sure you've got that equation memorized. But the important thing to note here is that this value right here, let's say, you probably didn't notice, but as x got big, that thing started to, the value went higher. It was when that ratio x over r got higher and higher, x over r was on the bottom axis, and it sort of went up to the right. So x over r getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Well, what if x over r is 87 trillion to the 500th power? So this is infinity. What does this number turn out to be? It's zero. Well, what's e to the zero? What's anything raised to the zero power? One. So the worst possible case is 1 plus 1, so it's 2 times the square root of 2, so 2.28. That is the absolute worst possible offset you can get. And you'll notice that that thing asymptotically starts approaching 2 times the square root of 2. Well, great, Dave, that's great theory, but, you know, I need a rule of thumb, you know. I'm not going to memorize this book. I appreciate how much hard work you put into it, but I'm not going to memorize the book. Well, here's the rules of thumb. Motor nameplate. You just want to get an X over R value. You tell me the motor horsepower, I'll tell you the typical X over R. So in this case, 100 horsepower motor is about an X over R of 8. There you go. Induction motors. Synchronous machines, though. Well, synchronous machines, I've got bigger numbers because typically, again, you almost never see an induction machine on a Caterpillar engine. You're talking about big, well, they're more expensive. You got to put a DC power supply on them. I mean, they're more expensive. So I don't have how about 1,000? 1,000 kVA. Notice here, 1,000 kVA looks like about a 26. 1,000 kVA, yeah, it looks like a little bit lower there, and then it sort of floats up. Okay. What about oil field transformers? Well, you got some big numbers here. You can go up to 50, depending on how big the transformer is. Now, again, these are monster transformers. There's 1 MVA, 10 MVA, 100 MVA. I don't know what that little jump right there is. But based on IEEE ANSI C37.010, there you go. And then finally, dry-type transformers. Wow. Look at the X over R ratio for a dry. 1.0 to 1.5. What does that tell you? Well, it basically tells us that there's a whole lot more R, because that's the denominator, for your typical kVA rating. And have you ever noticed how big a dry-type transformer is relative to an oil-filled transformer? You need to dissipate a lot of heat. They tend to be lower efficiency, higher losses. But the good news is they have lower offset because you have less X over R ratio. So we're all good there. And when we plug it in, so 1,000 kVA transformer, we go to our cheat sheet and 480 volts and plug it in, and 4.9, 2.16 were exact. Oh, this last thing I just want to kind of, if you go to 1.3-8, 1.3-10, it will talk about the exact method. The exact method says, hey, everything that you just did right now really is, even though it sounds complicated, it was still rules of thumb. You can't simply add Z's together and calculate the total Z because there, well, in fact, I drew this drawing. Again, this isn't in the book, but it helped me understand. If you look at impedance on the imaginary and real plane, R and JX, there's what impedance really is. You've got an R value, you've got an X value, you've got a Z value. Great. So if I take another Z value and I put it in series with that, what does that look like? Well, it's another R, and it's another X, and it looks like that. Well, let me ask you a question. Is if I were to draw R1 plus R2 and X1 and X2, is that equal to Z1 and Z2? In other words, is the length of Z1 and Z2 equal to the hypotenuse of that upper right-hand corner all the way back down to the origin? No, it's not. So in this case, they're longer. So you will calculate slightly lower fault current than really exists in your system, which is a bad thing. You typically want to be conservative when you're doing your mathematics. Why does this happen, and why do you sometimes ignore it? Well, let me ask you another question. If phi1 and phi2 were precisely the same angle, would z1 plus z2 equal that red line? Yes. So the thing is if the power factor of the circuits that you're connecting are always the same, then the Z method is precisely the same accuracy as the R plus JX method. If they're not, then it's never going to be. And the more they deviate, the more inaccurate it's going to be. So just as another little tidbit, impress your friends at the next party, I guess. Yeah, that's probably it. Here's another thing. You know what? I think I'm out of time, Doug. So what's our schedule here?
Okay.
10 minutes. I'll switch into. Okay. How many times has someone said, "Hey, I need to know what the R plus JX, the actual values are," but the manufacturer can't give it to you, or they don't know, or whatever? You can calculate it based on knowing loss data from the transformer. You can work backwards and figure it out. And here's the cheat sheet equations to do that. Watt's loss is equal to KVA divided by square root of 3 times R times 3. So Watt's loss is 9 kilowatts. It's a 550 KVA transformer. Well, I know what the KVA is. I know what the KV is. I know what the Watt loss is. I don't know what the R is, but I can solve for it. And the answer turns out to be, this is a little trick here. If you ever guys, you're going to plug this stuff into SKM. You're not going to do all this kind of stuff, but it's good to know the underlying math behind it. But Wolfram Alpha, if you go online, wolframalpha.com, it's normally a multi-$1,000 program if you put it on your computer. It's called Mathematica, but it's free online. And so what you can do is you plug this equation in, and it will solve for R. Or whatever you want to do. It'll solve amazingly complex equations, anything you want to put in there. But it solves it, and the answer turns out to be 6 milliohms. Well, that's pretty good. That basically means that the internal resistance of that transformer looks like a 6 milliohm resistor. So that's pretty small for a big transformer like that. But we got a problem. That's ohms, and we need to know percent. Well, if you go back to that 1.3-13, that big long table of all those equations, there's this equation that says percent Z is equal to this, this, and this. Well, I want percent R. It doesn't matter. That works for percent Z, percent X, percent R. They're all the same. So you plug the values into that equation. And so in this case, ohms impedance is my R, KVA base, KV squared, 10 is my percent R. I know what, it's 6 milliohms. It's 550 KVA, and the answer turns out to be 1.46% per unit. So the R percent of that transformer, not the Z, the R percent of that transformer is 1.46. Well, I want to know what the X is. Well, what's the X? Well, we all know our power factor triangle. So R squared plus X squared equals Z squared. Therefore, X equals square root of Z squared minus R squared. Plug and chug, X is equal to 5.3%. I got the data. That's method number one, just for completeness. Here's method number two. You can also plug in the I squared R losses divided by 10 times its KVA. You get percent R. You solve for percent Z the exact same way, square root of Z squared minus R squared equals X squared, and there you go. Who knew it was that easy? But I get a lot of people asking me, they want to know, data. Or sometimes it's the other way around. Can you tell me what those numbers are based on nameplate data? Because I'll get the Z value, and I'll know the KVA, and I'll know what the voltage is, but I don't know, and typically they will give me losses, but they won't give me no load, or there'll be some missing gaps, so I can use these calculations to plug in. The last thing I want to talk about is faults through transformers. I get a lot of questions about, hey, I got a YY transformer, I got a delta Y, I got a grounded Y. What's going on here? In my last couple of moments, I want to talk about faults on the secondary side of transformers and why you got to be careful about this. So we all know that the current in and the current out, there's a relationship. It's the turns ratio. And in the case of a delta Y, there's a 30-degree phase shift. But let's say that on that secondary, that transformer right there, It was wired up just like that. I think, is that what I'm going to show here? Yeah. So basically, the current's going in the primary, A plus B plus C, A plus B plus C. They all have to equal zero. That's Kirchhoff's current law. You can't manufacture magic current, and magic current can't disappear. So that's straightforward stuff. No sweat. We're good with that. What if I change that? You'll notice my secondary, I haven't grounded the neutral. So let's say I grounded the neutral. Well, now I've got another current to deal with. I've got a ground current. And do I draw that? Yeah, let's draw. Let's go to the next page here. So it's the same as it was before, but I put a fourth current in here, my ground current. So my primary current doesn't change because there's no, I mean, still only got three wires and I can't magically create or destroy current. So what happens if I get a ground fault on said transformer with a secondary neutral grounded? Well, the rule still has to be. I mean, those currents all have to sum out to zero, or the way I've drawn it, you notice that I think I put in here that the direction of the, notice that the red arrow, the way I've drawn it, the red arrow is going that way, the black arrow is going this way, so ground fault current and what I call ground current are opposite each other, but I mean, it's the same deal. So this equation, I end up making this go on the other side, but this plus this plus this has to equal this. Has to. But this plus this plus this has to equal that too. Okay, well, what's your point, Dave? Well, just that that has to be true. Well, then the question is, where's the ground current on the primary? I've got this additional current, or something's out of whack. If you think about a transformer that somehow these currents are sort of proportional to these currents, I got this extra current. I don't have a neutral here. So I got something going on here. How do these currents change? What's going on here? In particular, if you ever get into, and I don't know if you get this, if you had power system analysis or if that's graduate. No, I think that's undergraduate. I think that's undergraduate. You'll hear something talked about zero sequence current. You can take all of your currents and you can split them into positive sequence, negative sequence, and zero sequence. This is called zero sequence current. It's flowing. It's flowing through ground, which is what it boils down to. But there's no ground over here. So where, if I put this CT around here, by the way, when you put a CT around all three phases, the output of the CT is your zero sequence current. It's the current that's not in the phases. It's basically flowing through ground. But there's no zero sequence current here. The sum of those currents has to equal zero. So what's going on? Where is my ground current in the primary? What, anybody know? Well, the trick or the secret is that's a delta winding. Delta windings do something very interesting to ground currents. It circulates. Just ring around the rosy inside my transformer. Well, this is good news and bad news. The good news is that per code, I need to ground. This is probably feeding lighting loads or plug loads. I have to ground that. But if I had another ground up here, I don't want those two grounds to interact. I could get some problems with my ground fault breakers. So it's good that no ground current flows through this transformer right here. What's the bad? Why is it bad to have circulating current inside that primary winding? Yeah. Remember Dan talked about earlier, he said capacitors free up capacity. Well, if I have ground current circulating in here, I'm going to hog some of the capacity. Well, I don't have ground faults in my system all the time, so normally I don't care. What you're going to learn about tomorrow is harmonics, and Dan's going to talk to you about some harmonics that can mimic zero sequence currents, and they circulate in the neutral and they overheat. You'll see transformers out there that get cherry red hot when you put nonlinear loads on them, delta Y transformers. Well, then the answer is don't use a delta Y transformer. Let's go YY. You know. Let's go YY. In fact, I don't like ground currents. Let's not even ground the primary. Let's just do an ungrounded primary and a grounded secondary. Well, if I put a ground fault in the secondary of a ungrounded Y, grounded Y, Kirchhoff current law has to be add on both sides. So the sum of A plus B plus ground plus C has to equal zero, likewise on the primary. So the question is, where's my cheat path on a Y transformer? I mean, it's the same issue that my zero sequence CT on the primary still is going to show zero current. But now I don't have this internal chi path. Where's the current going to go? The answer is it doesn't go anywhere. What that means is I cannot get, that's essentially ungrounded secondary. I have mathematically proven that even though I have grounded that secondary transformer, it's an ungrounded system. Because what's the difference? Ground, I've grounded it so the current can flow into the ground. But no current can flow in the ground because mathematically I can't make it so that there's any zero sequence current on the primary. I know it's a bit of a paradox. This is why you never create or never, you just don't. First off, I'm not a big fan of YY. I know that utilities love them because there's another reason why. You know the reason why utilities love YY transformers? Have you ever worked on a higher voltage, like a 34.5 kV system, and the utility specified a YY transformer, and if you ever wondered why? Well, it turns out that I can use lower rated switches upstream of that. I don't have to have full voltage switches because the maximum voltage is across any one of these windings here. Think about it, that's coming from a transformer that's connected Y neutral grounded. So the maximum voltage on that switch right there can be no higher than a line of neutral voltage. So that'd be like a 25 kV switch on a 34 kV system. You know, if you're building a hospital and you got a couple of dozen, who cares? But if you're building a utility and you're building hundreds or thousands, that's real money that you're saving. So they'll make you put in a YY transformer. But whenever you see YY, red alarm light should be going off. It's like, danger, Will Robinson. I need to really be careful when I start designing this system, because I don't even have the time to start going into other issues. But the first issue is this grounded YY transformer is not grounded. So you have to ground both sides. When I ground both sides, the math works, and then it works. So all's well in the world. One last thing. Did I say this earlier? I think I said one last thing before. Sorry about that. The really last thing, all this talk about grounding sometimes gets people to say, well, you know what, I'm just not even going to mess with grounding. I'm going to put an ungrounded system in because that will solve all my world's problems, because that, frankly, if I ground a phase, I don't care. There's no path for the current to flow back, therefore I have a pretty reliable system. Maybe I should put that in a data center. Maybe I should put that in mission critical hospital. I should put this in all my hospitals. Do not do that. Here's why. That looks like it's ungrounded. There really is no such thing as an ungrounded system, turns out. It may not have any hard connection ground, but it's capacitively grounded. Because think about it, those wires that are flowing through that conduit, got a nice little plastic sheet, a little dielectric. There's a line to ground capacitor, and you've got one on each of three phases. Okay, so what? Well, think about it. I've got a little fault up there. I've got a little capacitor there. I've got a little bit of current flowing there. But you know what? I've got inductance in those cables too. Not a lot of inductance, but frankly, I don't have a lot of capacitance either. What happens when I have an inductor and a capacitor in series or parallel? Doesn't matter. What do I get? I get a resonance circuit. So think about it. I've got this capacitor that's being charged up, and I've got this little inductor, which is my cable, and I've got this switch, which is called a ground fault. And I'm closing and I'm opening. Let's say it's an intermittent ground fault. You know, it's not, again, it's an ungrounded system. Even when it's grounded, how much current's going to flow through those things? I'll tell you right now, on a 480 volt system, typical charging currents are around 1 amp. Who cares? 1 amp of ground current, I barely could see a spark. I'll show you here in a second why you care. But the fact of the matter is, I'm switching this thing on, switching this thing off, little tiny spark occurring. But look at this. Look, let's draw the KVL equation. Let's do the Kirchhoff voltage law. Well, it basically says that this voltage minus this voltage equals zero, right? Pretty straightforward. Well, we already know that the voltage across an inductor is our famous L equals DIDT thing, V equals LDIDT. So I plug in. So now VC minus LDIDT. You didn't know you're going to be solving differential equations in here. Actually, we're not going to. I'll save you on that one. But I rewrite this equation, and VC now, so the voltage across this capacitor, which is, by the way, line to ground, is equal to L di dt. Well, L di dt, well, pretty small L. Nothing to get worked up about that. And it's only 1 amp, so the di is pretty small. But how fast is that dt? How fast could that be? Milliseconds? I mean, I'm just opening a circuit. It could be. So that multiplier factor here, multiplied times that inductance, could be a big number. Well, it turns out it's a really big number. This was actually discovered in the 50s, but I still see people talking about ungrounded systems. This is just a simulation. This was a SPICE simulation. And it's probably not real readable, but here is the original neutral to ground voltage, right here, and then this is your phase voltage relative to ground, but which is interesting, because think about it, it's an ungrounded system. So what are we talking about, neutral? Well, remember those three capacitors? If they're all the same size, it's sort of like a voltage divider. So I've sort of derived a neutral, and the voltage relative to that neutral tends to be each of the three phases is balanced around that derived neutral. So that's this value here. But now all of a sudden I get this ground fault, and I get this very interesting bang-bang effect here, where after the first fault, it jumps down to here, and now my neutral to ground voltage went from 0 to 660 volts. And then I got the second, because it's bouncing. It's you know, I got a, I don't know, the wire is going through the metal sheet steel, and the contractor forgot to put the grommet in there, and it's cut into the wire, and it's just sort of vibrating. It jumps up there to this high voltage. Now we're up to 1.6 kV. It jump. I'll tell you, if you ever get called out on a job, and here's the symptom of a ungrounded intermittent ground fault. If you ever hear of a job where they said, it was the weirdest thing. I had multiple failures of motors. It was like they all fail at the same time. It's the strangest thing. Well, no, it's not. Motors have very low BIL ratings. If you look, what we're doing here is we're raising the line to ground voltage higher and higher and higher. Who's the weakest link? Now, if you've got SPDs on the system, they're going to be the weakest link. You'll be blowing those things up left and right. So you'll be saying, gosh, this thing, I put in a 400 kiloamp SPD and the thing failed after a year. What a piece of junk. Get on the hunt for intermittent ground faults. If you don't have SPDs, which you probably will, but if you didn't, the next lowest BIL thing is motors or control power transformers. The little baby transformers that you see inside a motor control center buckets, very low BIL. Those are the things that are going to be killed by this system. And so don't, bottom line, please do not put in an ungrounded system. That really was my last slide. So so thank you all. I went a little bit over than what the schedule says, but like I said, I love this stuff. And I appreciate it.